The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Harris Stowe State University or Black Radio Hall of Fame.
Africans at home and throughout the diaspora, unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity.
Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now's the time to do the right.
That's right. That's right. This is the place where we're going to find out how to do it right. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. This is the radio show that we connect the dots. We connect the people who are doing the work on the battlefield so that you get a comprehensive view of all that's going on as it relates to social justice, racial justice, and all of the isms that we are fighting. And so today we have a special guest, and we might have two special guests, but for now we have Dan Slatterman, who is representing a couple of organizations. It's hard to represent one because sometimes those principles are integrated, and so you really feel like you are integrated kind of person with this. But you represent O2O Strategy, and you also, how I met you is for Standing for Democracy. So talk a little bit, Dan, and first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And talk what you do in the O2O Strategy, and then let's move to Standing for Democracy, because then I'm a part of that too.
Okay, sure. Well, again, thank you for having me. I'm a senior advisor with the O2O Strategy Group, and we are an organization that works with labor unions, community organizations, environmental organizations, sort of lots of different groups that are working to leverage digital strategies for their campaign so that they can scale and have much, much bigger conversations. We're called O2O Strategy, which stands for online to offline, because ultimately our goal is to initially engage people online and then move them into taking action in the real world. So joining mobilizations, going to talk to their elected officials, speaking to the media, sort of all those different things that are part of a campaign. And so we do that work with lots of amazing organizations.
And let's move to, that's pretty powerful because we live in a digital age where communications and all things visual and digital matter. They are part of what keeps people confused. They are part of what people engaged, informed, and organized. So it's like a double-edged sword. So what's happening with Standing for Democracy? What is it about? Where did it come from? And what is it going to be doing going forward?
Yeah, I'm a co-founder of Standing for Democracy with Bill Fletcher. The two of us were looking at the state of the world and were worried about sort of the direction things were headed in terms of this previous election. And we felt like building an organization like Standing for Democracy was really important because of what we saw, in the winds heading our direction. And so we launched Standing for Democracy. It is a strategy center that's designed to work with working people, unions, all kinds of different civil rights organizations and others, really trying to figure out not just how we respond to what's happening with the MAGA movement, but that we actually build long-term solutions so that we can, win our future and build the kind of nation that we all believe in, which is quite different than the world that, as we're seeing, being laid out in front of us now. And so we launched that in late last year and have been building it ever since.
So I might add that at the same time you and Bill were looking around the world and seeing the threat, there were others doing the same thing, and we found each other. So I am part of the executive committee, and so we have been sponsoring and co-sponsoring and pushing momentum and emotions, like this past hands off, and last week it was the May Day celebrations, and so this is all about the mobilizations are all about organizing people into a strategy one, because we don't want to just be protesting for protesting's sake. We want to make sure that it means something, because there's limited energy, limited resources, and so we got to make everything count. So let's start. This is really about the threat to democracy. And I just talked to a young person today, and she went to a meeting, and she's just all fired up right now about like what's happening, because I think for some people, there is a place where there's the aha moment that strikes a chord with them, whether it be based on something they're going through or something they see other people going through. But this thing has been bubbling and unfolding for a while, because this man and his cohorts, released Project 2025. And how long ago was that, Dan? I mean, that was almost 2 years ago. And people did not believe it. It was so bodacious a plan that people said, "Oh no, he's just full of it. He's not going to do that." And almost everything that's in that plan, he is doing. He is doing.
Everything. I mean, everything we're seeing has been laid out in front of us for, unfortunately, very long. And many of us were trying to warn people, and we're seeing exactly that. And then, I think we have like two forces that are at play here. Is there's, the forces that helped develop and are now implementing Project 2025, and then you have the tech billionaires who have another vision and who are, moving their attacks on our democracy as well, because they do not believe in democracy. They believe that, they should be the CEO of all of us.
Right. And that's a good way to put it, because I think some of the descriptors that we've heard is unparalleled, unprecedented. I mean, and I think the whole thing seems to have caught people off guard, including the people who's supposed to study democracies and constitutional law. They're even saying, like, we've never been here before. We don't know what to do. Yes, we do. We know what to do. We just need to get organized and do it. So to me, Dan, the two things that I think about when I look at authoritarian governments, or I look at dictatorships, or I look at even the way Nazism took hold in Germany and started spreading, the two things that were first under attack was the media and universities. And so, if you will, talk about the attacks on the news media. I mean, not just AP, but some of the other folks who are catching hell. And I think this man is even talking about revising the way the press room was set up at the White House. And for the first time ever, the White House press, what do they call the White House press corps, did not have
The press
a
pool.
they did not have a president there. I mean, I get that probably not having a comedian there, but I mean, after all, this man has attacked probably most of them in the room, but I see the reason for that. But talk about what it means when you attack free speech and you attack outlets of independent thought.
I mean, there's like, I mean, if folks want to spend a little bit of time kind of getting a preview of our future, Hungary and Orban and what he's doing there is exactly the same blueprint that Trump is using. And then Musk and the Doge movement is based on what you can see right now happening in Argentina, where they're doing the exact same things. In each of those cases, the goal is to severely weaken our democracy. Their goal is to make us afraid, and make us want to just, sort of hide and hope it's going to go away. And they're, I mean, Trump has been, very skilled over the years at, really playing the media card and, disrupting and undermining people's belief in the media. And you can watch him even right now, the way he plays the media. He has that whole Signal gate, where his the head of the Pentagon was using Signal, and that was like they were taking hits over that. And then suddenly he starts talking about he's going to run for a third term, which is completely unconstitutional, and they drop that story and move right on to the next one. His tariffs were, have been a disaster. And, again, he starts, just changing the subject and, to, and like talking about putting Americans in prisons in El Salvador, and suddenly, the media moves again. And so, not only is he just, undermining the media and attacking it and attacking universities and all of it, he's also just, overly skilled at, making them follow his moves. And, that's why it's so important that we all, we all create an alternative media. We all talk to each other. We all make sure that we don't get lost in all of this, because their goal is to scare us. Their goal is to make us feel like fighting back is not worth it or impossible, and, and to isolate us. And I know that when, I was out marching on the 5th and, in May Day, one of the things that you see from people is like they get to be in the street together. They don't feel isolated. They feel like they're a part of something. And that's one of the things that we can do to, fight back against, this goal of theirs, is to be together and, realize we are not alone in this.
Well, that is even being threatened. In Missouri, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been pushing back on a law that actually has been passed in other states, and that is criminalizing assembly. So, and also making organizations and organizers liable for anything that happens when there is a protest or civil disobedience. So, that has had a chilling effect on people even coming together. The fact that there are news outlets who have tried to conform to his demands. I mean, I think about, for example, the producer, I guess he's a producer of 60 Minutes, resigned because he felt like there was too much interference from Trump. And, to me, when people quit, and some of it depends on, I guess, the situation, but I remember hearing a Japanese leader say that what Trump is doing is pure, sheer extortion. And with extortions, once you pay them, you have
Never
to
ends.
pay them again. And he said, we're not going to be extorted like that. And I keep thinking the same thing. And so I imagine quitting or submitting resignations are similar to that, in that you've given in and you've conceded ground to him and you've conceded power to him. And I know that sometimes for your own mental health, you need to get up out of there. But what do you think about people that is as powerful as this person was with 60 Minutes stepping aside because of all the flack that he's getting from the trumpets?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you see a lot of people that are resigning as a result of feeling like they're being asked to conform to things that they don't believe, or violating what they believe it means to have a free and open media. And so, we're seeing that. And, while that's an act of fighting back, I do think the question that you're raising is right, is like, once, every time that that happens, like they see that as a victory, like they're, and then it feeds them to do more. I mean, I think you saw when he attacked all the law firms, and when those first law firms cut a deal with him, he then attacked even more law firms. And,
Exactly.
luckily a bunch of those law firms said, no, we're not gonna, and they're now fighting back and they're winning in the courts. And so, as the old saying goes, if you give a bully, like the room, they're going to take it. And, the best way to fight a bully is you got to fight back. And he is a bully. We got to fight back, as challenging and hard as that is our choice.
And the other thing that I mentioned was the universities and the colleges who he's really gone after. Of course, to go after Harvard is the first one of the first ones. Maybe not have been a smooth move because already he's like backpedaling on that. But we have people from the academy that are a part of Standing for Democracy, and they are, the radical elements of those, and so they've been catching hell in some ways. And even, I just talked to one of my folks at Harvard. Those folks felt like, yes, they're standing up, But on the other side, they're getting ready to come after them around, like, you all aren't taking care of our Jewish students here. And so there's already been criticism about that. So it's just been a very complicated way of trying to support people and trying to call them out. But what do you think is going to happen to that particular sector, the academy, where it's supposed to be all of this free thinking and stimulation of young people to look at new ideas? And what is, if you got somebody that says none of that is going to happen unless we say so, what does that do to the whole nature of being a world citizen and what that means?
Yeah. I mean, a really critical question. And I think we're still waiting to see, right? I mean, Columbia bowed and they kept pushing further and started going after more universities. And now Harvard is fighting back. And then the administration's response was, oh, that was a mistake. We didn't mean to send that letter. I mean, I do think the one thing we're seeing from Trump is he can be a lot more bluster than bite. And so, you look on the tariffs. Like he's like, I'm going to put, 150% tariff on China, call me. And then China doesn't call. And now suddenly he's like, I'm lowering the tariffs, right? So, and I think it's a, all of the other countries that are supposed to be negotiating, new trade deals, they're all sitting back and waiting now. And like they can't get a deal with anybody. So I think it's a question of, we shouldn't underestimate, but we also should also understand that there is a, there's a lot more bluster than bite. With some of this. And so, I think they're banking on us being afraid to stand up to them, as a part of their strategy. And so, we shouldn't underestimate it, but we should also sort of see what's in front of our eyes, which is he talks a big game. And when people push back, he doesn't always have an actual, he doesn't have anything behind it, in most cases. In some cases, he does. So, but I do think the jury is out. But, traditionally, when you look at the attacks on democracies, you look at the attacks on free speech, you look at the attacks on university, all of this is about trying to undermine the institutions that, make our places free, where people are allowed to, think through and come up with new ways and new ideas. And, they're trying to attack all of that. And those are all of the traditional things that when you're trying to destroy democracy, these are the places you go at. And so we're seeing it right in front of us.
But Dan, do you really think it's bluster, or do you think he actually wants to do what he says, but he doesn't understand the impact that his little bullying is going to have? And once he sees the impact, or somebody says you can't do that, then that's when he starts doing it. Because I'm thinking that he means to do everything he says he's going to do. It's almost like, oops, I didn't know that was going to happen. And when he saw that stock market fall, and all those people, his little buddies, say, hey, none of you better come up off of that. Then he's like, oh, okay, maybe I won't do that. But I'm just thinking he thinks he's king of the world, and whatever he says he wants to do, he actually can do it.
Yes, he can. And the question I think we're seeing in front of us is I feel like we're seeing parts of his administration. They have a plan and they're moving it. A lot of the Project 2025 work, the dismantling of the federal government, the attacks on unions and the attacks on federal unions specifically, all of that. But then it mixed into there, you see him attacking spaces where he doesn't have a plan beyond, just sort of like, trying to force people to his will. And so I feel like the learning from that is not to underestimate, but to understand that sometimes he's got a plan and sometimes he doesn't. And so, we should be pushing back everywhere and assuming, I live by a philosophy of my life of prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And so, and I think we should be looking at these situations and trying to see like, is this, what's the real push here and how serious are they? Because I think we can win back some spaces by standing up.
Yeah, well, I thought I came across an interesting article that was trying to delineate what Trump can do, even though it might be immoral, unethical, unreasonable. And I thought that was an interesting way to put it, because there are folks, for example, who saw all of the firings happening. It's like, well, he can't do that. Well, in some cases, he can. It doesn't make sense to do it because you throw a whole agency out into turmoil. But canceling contracts, all of that, he has the power to do. Now, I think because most of us in this country don't understand the way government functions, I could say it like this, we kind of skipped over the civics lesson in class. We don't really know the powers of the president. We don't know the powers of the judicial branch. I mean, we know that there were three branches. Some of us do, that there were three branches of government. But here's somebody that's basically using executive power to even influence those two sectors. So when I think about, for example, the courts, who says, no, you can't do that, and they're basing it on law. And then he ignores it. What do we do about that, Daniel? What do we do about somebody that's in that position that totally is disregarding Constitution and law?
I think, the thing that I've always, at the foundation of this question is like this argument that business people should run government because business is more effective. I
And
always think
efficient.
is, yeah. And I always like businesses are not democracies. Like a CEO is a king. Like they can make any decision. They have total power, and a democracy is not that, it's not supposed to be that. And so we have a guy who's a business guy who claims that he alone can fix things, and that's not the way democracy works. And so and he is trying to dismantle as many checks and balances as he can. I mean, I you know he's attacking the courts, they're arresting judges, they are ignoring a 9-0 Supreme Court decision, and none of us would argue that that's a liberal Supreme Court at all. If they voted 9-0, it's pretty clear. He's, talking about running for a third term, which is completely against the Constitution. I mean, he does not care about the law. He does, and he is trying to dismantle checks and balances. And, I think, we're in a what one would argue is a constitutional crisis because he's ignoring those things. But unfortunately, I don't think we're actually in as deep of a constitutional crisis as we're going to be when he starts to use his pardon powers, to pardon, the lawyers who are not helping to return Mr. Garcia from El Salvador, or when he starts pardoning, other folks, across the administration when they're engaged in illegal activities. And so, like, our checks and balances have been destroyed. Are being destroyed by Trump, but he was ultimately given this power by our Supreme Court, who said he has immunity. And so, we have so the idea that the courts are going to solve our problem, I don't think so. I mean, we've seen he used his pardon power to pardon all those January 6 terrorists, and had no qualms about it. He's going to use it here as well. And so, the courts are not going to hold. We have to. They're going to maybe slow him down or all of that, but it's like we're going to have to fight to save our nation, and we're going to have to fight, to build a better future for all of us. And there's more of us. I mean, every day his policies are putting him more and more, in the he's at his first 100 days, and he's already the least popular president ever at the end of his first 100 days, right? So, there are more of us. We just have to join together.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Organize, organize, organize. I'm thinking though with the courts that many people think that is the stopgap, because that's been the thing that protected us all along. Quote, we are a nation of laws. But if you have somebody in a seat of power as Trump is, and you totally disregarding not just the law itself, but then when a court reinforces the law and upholds the law, then you do something to that person or you ignore the law. Where do we go from here?
I mean,
I mean, I guess my point is, how low can we go before something else kicks in?
mean, we're here, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We now have to answer that question. Like, that's the question in front of us. And that's a part of what groups like Standing for Democracy are trying to do, is like, we want to unite people together so that we can start to talk about solutions. We want to start to think about, what is the kind of country we really want to build, and let's start to fight for it. But yeah, we're here. I mean, we have a completely immoral man at the top of our government who's demonstrating that he has no care for children with cancer who he's shipping out of the country, who are U.S. citizens, who's demonstrated he has no care for shipping people to, concentration camps, essentially, in El Salvador with no due process, who shows he has no care for the way that he is, destroyed many retirement plans, and many people who are currently living off of those retirement plans have lost, trillions of dollars with his games that he's playing with our economy. And the list goes on and on. And we're only 100 days in, and he's
Yeah,
already
yeah, yeah.
already saying the
That
courts don't
truly
matter.
is frightening. As I'm listening to you, I'm like, yikes.
Yeah.
So
So we're
I'm
here.
thinking,
We're here.
yeah, we're here. We better start moving really, really quickly. The other part of me started to look at the watchdog agencies, which he knocked them out the box really soon. But part of that, even watchdogs inside places like the National Institute for Health, like FDA, like EPA, and people realize, for example, the importance of the EPA, because St. Louis made national news because of Coal Creek, the cancerous rates here because they stored all that radioactive stuff. Now, this is your government doing this, and so they have a responsibility to remedy that and to make whole the people who have been adversely affected. But their first thing is always to deny, deny, deny. And but now that he's sort of destroying all those folks who could hold him accountable, even as weak as they were, Dan. I mean, they pretty much have been made toothless, even folks like the National Labor Relations. All those folks like or were on shoestring budgets. They didn't have enough funding and staff to do what they need to do. But now he's like, oh, y'all gone. We don't need you anymore. So I'm just wondering who's left to really hold them accountable except for Congress.
And the citizens of our country. I mean, throughout history, we've all had to stand up and fight for the kind of nation that we believe and want for our children and for our grandchildren. And we're back at that moment where we all need to be the accountability for this, for the future of our nation. I mean, they are knocking out the typical checks and balances of the courts and of, the agencies and of all of it. And so, the question that's really in front of us all is, what is the world we want to fight for?
Yeah.
What is what we want to build? And it's, in my conversations with people, like, nobody wants to say, well, let's just put back what was there before, because, as you just said, a lot of those things were toothless, a lot of those things weren't enough, a lot of those things were already tilted towards corporations and towards the powerful. So I like to think about, that this is an opportunity for us to dream about a different United States, about a different kind of democracy, for us to really rethink about what is healthy and how do we get money out of politics. Like, how does Elon Musk have the ability to try to just buy votes and all of that, and he's only one person. It's supposed to
By
be.
judgeships on the
Right.
Wisconsin Supreme Court. Yeah, all of
And
that. All of that.
thank God for the people of Wisconsin who said, no, you're not gonna buy our elections.
Right.
And so, I do think, I think we've got some really important examples in front of us about how we fight back. I think Wisconsin, where folks stood up, and that was like a midterm election with a usually really low turnout, and it had massive turnout, and people showed up and said, not in Wisconsin. I think when you see the Tesla takedown movement and the fact that, Elon thought he was untouchable, and, instead his company is damaged most likely permanently. Like, who's going to buy a Tesla now? People are, people are not good. Like, he has destroyed a reputation of a company that was worth trillions, and he's cost that company hundreds of billions of dollars, and he's lost lots of money himself. And all of that was because people stood up and said, let's show up at the showrooms. Let's make sure nobody can go buy a Tesla car without knowing what Elon was doing. And I think the mobilizations, all of this, like, these are all demonstrations of that we can take our democracy back, we can take control of our country, and we don't need to wait for anybody. This is one of those moments of you are who you're looking, you are the person that you're waiting
Need
on.
you
Like,
look? Yeah,
we have to get out there and do
absolutely.
this.
So if you're just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and I'm talking to Dan Schlatterman with Standing for Democracy, which is a group that really is trying to pull together the concerned and interested and resolved people to say no more and to fight against this authoritarianism and in fact build a united front against fascism. I'm wondering, Dan, there's lots of destruction going on, and sometimes it's so much that you can't even keep up with it. Where do you believe he's doing the most damage that is going to cost us dearly for a long time to come?
I mean, I think the tariff policy is has done very, very long-term damage. I'm somebody who grew up and was against NAFTA, and like, I'm not a, I've never been a fan of free trade. But I also know, like, doing tariffs the way he's doing them is not how tariffs are supposed to work. Like, if he was just using tariffs to protect the auto industry, that would probably be a good thing for, for auto workers in our country. But the way he is trying to use tariffs and the way our economy is currently built, we don't benefit from tariffs. We just pay the price of it. And so I think the cost that we're going to face on the tariffs is potentially long term. We have destroyed credibility of the United States around the globe. We're no longer seen as sort of the, a safe place anymore because of his. One day his policy is this, the next day his policy is that. And so all of that is going to have an impact on us on many, many fronts in terms of what's going to be happening on the shelves of our stores over the next couple of months. What's happened to our retirement plans, if you have a 401k or a pension, what's going to be happening in terms of our ability to build relationships with other countries to trust us and work together. And then just the attacks we've like he's done on our neighbors. Like, Canada has been a long-term partner of our country, and as has Mexico. And if anybody lives on a border town, you know that like the border is, like the cross existence of going across the border and the way those economies work together in those spaces, like they're gonna pay prices as well. So I mean, I believe just in terms of economically, that's the most dangerous. I think also his deportation policies are just, like that is scaring our communities. That is, putting fear. I saw a little girl who had written a note that said, "If I am taken to El Salvador, please tell my parents I love them." Right? I mean, it's like our children
Being traumatized.
are being traumatized by these policies. And again, it's like our job is and our belief in our country should be about giving children a safe space to grow up and become, the dreams that they want to become. Instead, this little girl is worried about being taken to a prison in El Salvador. So I just think it's, that those policies are dangerous. And I think the destruction of unions. I mean, unions are, that is democracy at place in the workplace. The whole point of a union is to give those that are in the union a voice in their work and a voice against their employer. And that's day-to-day democracy that is critical in people learning and knowing how important democracy is. And the fact that he is now the president who has done the largest attack on labor unions in the history of our country by wiping out so many unions. I think the consequences of all of those things are still coming. And so And then it's just, I mean, just the list goes on and on. I mean, unfortunately, the list could go on and on. It's hard, in some ways, it's hard to say
Yeah,
this is the
but
worst.
I think the point you make about the tariffs, because if you hook them up with the kind of wealth transfer based on that, I don't, you're right. I don't know how you can recuperate from that in even in a few years. That might take generations.
And the part of the tariffs that makes me so angry is we all paid the price of our economy going to a free trade economy that both parties were a part of making happen. We lost union jobs, we lost high-paying jobs, we had less people have health care. Like you go through the list of like the foundations that we lost as our economy changed from manufacturing and other types of jobs that were shipped overseas to our economy now. And now the tariffs, the way they're going to work is they're going to make us try to pay on the other side of that policy by with higher prices and all of it. So it's just like they want us to pay on both sides, and that's not it's not acceptable, you know?
It's not acceptable, and it actually is undoable for a lot of people. Somebody told me about a letter that a citizen of Missouri got to say that their benefits were being cut, and of course they blamed it on Trump. But what people don't understand is in Missouri and probably other red states is that some of that stuff was already happening. And it just got a boost when he came in November. So in Missouri, they had been against the expansion of Medicaid forever. I mean, we finally did a ballot initiative and got it on there. And some of the very people in rural Missouri that was needing that Medicaid expansion voted for him. So when we start talking about now, they're rethinking all of these quote entitlements. And I had to explain to this person like what the difference is between SSA and SSI, because I think first they're gonna go after the entitle what they call entitlements. So that's people who get the SSI. They might be developmentally or mentally disabled or some kind of physical disability, and then Medicaid is for folks who have a certain income. So those people then will get more hardship because their stuff is going to be cut. They're talking about doing something to Social Security, which is our money that we work for, and it's put in the pot, and now we get it when we get older. And the same thing with Medicare. So that's might be slower to get to them, but I just think for the poor folks, they are getting ready to get a big hit. And so that letter that this showed me, I'm thinking, okay, this is the tip of the iceberg, and this is why we need to keep sounding the alarm because people haven't been listening, or they thought it was going to happen to someone else, and now it's at their front door, it's in their mailbox. And so some of the things that I know Standing for Democracy has been doing is just really whatever avenues that we have to let people know what's going on, how it's looking, because sometimes people may not understand the way that this thing looks, and they may not know what to look for. We've been really trying to help them do that, but more importantly, just to be organized. I've been
I
telling
mean,
my listeners to keep your congressperson on speed dial. Because when you talk about, when I ask you about the buck stops with Congress, they still are representatives. So if we don't influence
100%.
them and we don't pressure them, they're not going to do anything. That's why they're ducking and dodging during the recess, because they don't want to do those town halls and hear people like complain about what's going on in their personal lives. So yeah, it's a hot mess.
Well, there's this your point about red states versus and how they're going to pay the price here. I mean, it's very true. I mean, here's a clear example of some figures that I saw the other day. So California paid $183 billion more to the federal government than the federal government provided back to them. Texas, right? Big red state, voted for Trump. They took a whopping $89 billion from the federal government, meaning they paid $89 million less to the federal government than the federal government gave to them. So blue states are subsidizing red states all over. And as they destroy these programs, states who have, are going to be able to sort of figure out some state solutions. Red states don't have the money, right? So they're just, those folks are just going to lose out on lots of really important programs, healthcare, and all the other kind of stuff. So the consequences of this are still coming for a lot of folks. And, they're unfortunately the whole elections has consequences saying as it goes. The policies that are moving by this administration are going to create real consequences for red states, even though they voted for him. So this is going to be
Yes.
difficult.
Dan, I want you to stay with that a minute because I think that the way that you said that, I don't think that people see it that way. They see all 50 states as equal, both receiving and giving in an equal way, but that is absolutely not the case. And then when I see the way that the president comes after the governor of California, and then I just recently read that California is doing enough trade in and of itself that it could be a separate a country. And I'm thinking,
California is one of the
well,
has one of the largest, GDPs compared to
yeah,
like they're larger than
I'm
most
like,
other countries.
they could succeed and then we'll be up Schitt's Creek without a paddle, if he keeps messing with him. But the whole thing of inequality is at every level. That's what I'm thinking about as you were saying that. And like when I think about a red state like Mississippi, that's always number 50 in terms of quality of life indicators. But yet, these folks are doing all kind of harm, not only to their own citizens in the state, but to the rest of us. They're taking their little whatever they're doing locally and exporting it in ways that are just going to be just a mess for the rest of
And
us.
Mississippi is another state that does not supply. They cost all of us. We all subsidize Mississippi, just like we're all subsidizing Texas, just like we're all subsidizing so many of the red states. Kentucky is another state that we all subsidize.
Is that the place where the Speaker of the House is from?
That's the home of Mitch McConnell, right? I mean,
Yes. Yeah,
the
that's
man.
always up there, tooting his horn and looking all puffed up. Yeah.
The man
Yeah.
who
He
refused to allow President Obama to complete his Supreme Court picks, the man who made it clear that he was going to undermine Obamacare every step of the way. I mean, these are folks who have continuously harmed our country, and we're all subsidizing it, which is just so frustrating.
Yeah, well, I would love to get that article to talk about that some more because I think the way that people look at it again, it's like we're all in this together and we all paying the same thing, but we are not. We absolutely are not. And then when you start adding the billionaires on top of that who are extracting from the public coffers,
And who pay their fair share in taxes. I
who
mean,
don't pay their fair share.
Elon Musk, there was one year where we were able to see the IRS documents of his tax filings, and he paid 3% in taxes that year, and he's the richest man on the planet. Now, I would like to be able to pay 3%, but the way taxes work is we all pay, we all sacrifice the same from what we make, and except for rich people, right? 3%
Yeah,
was in taxes.
I think I saw on the Standing for Democracy Facebook page there was a meme that said if you paid more than $1 in taxes, you paid more than, and then it listed like all the billionaires who hadn't paid any damn money.
Jeff Bezos, Elon
Yes.
Musk, like all of the, and then it was like Amazon for a couple of years. I mean, it's just,
Yeah, yeah.
so many corporations. Tesla didn't pay, a couple of years didn't pay any taxes. It's just like, we're all subsidizing them.
So the red states are being subsidized by the blue states. The poor folks of the country are subsidizing the billionaires. What is wrong with that picture?
I mean, the other number to know is out of most people's pockets, we all pay about $36 a year to subsidize food stamps. Out of our same pocket, we pay almost $700 a year to subsidize corporations. So who's really the ones that are living off of all of us? It's certainly not anybody who's getting food stamps. It's the folks who are it's these corporations who aren't paying their fair share. And we
But
all
then,
know
don't you
sports
think,
camps are
yeah,
an
don't you think
important.
that's the narrative that's been twisted so that we're pointing fingers at the wrong people and the other ones are getting away with murder, literally murder.
No, and that's why right now, as Trump and friends are trying to figure out this $1 trillion tax cut that they want to give to rich people again, they want to pay for it by just getting rid of Medicaid. They want to pay for it, by these, this DOGE attacks on our government so that we have less services. And then we're all going to, his tax bill means we're all going to pay higher taxes. It's just the top 5% who get the biggest breaks. It's criminal.
When I think about the money, for example, that gets spent on military and the budget there, I mean, though this is one thing that it's just been interesting, and I've been writing for years trying to convince people about how to use their tax dollars. For some reason, think once they pay taxes that that money is not theirs. I've come to that conclusion that they don't believe they can do anything about it. I'm like, okay, what if you gave money to a friend and they borrowed it, or you gave money to your brother? Would it not be expecting some return, or you get your money back? But once they give it to the government, whether it's local, state, or federal, they like the this. No, we got to make them accountable for the way that they use our money. And so that's been a long, hard struggle because, again, I just, at a certain point, I realized that's what people think, that it's nothing they can do about it once they pay, which is absolutely not the case. And so when you start seeing our government do things with our money, like genocide in Gaza, then you're like, wait a minute, I didn't vote for that. That's not what I want done with my money. The previous in Missouri, Dan, sent like $100,000 of our tax dollars down to the border. Like Missouri is on the border. Like he's trying to keep the border safe. Again, our tax dollars, and I'm trying to tell people, we can't let them just take public dollars. Just and somebody used the word looting, and that's really what it is looting the public coffers, because that's where all the money is right now, so that they don't have to spend their money. All their money is going to be for profit, and they're going to use ours to help them make more. So when I think about taxes, you're in communications. What how could we reframe that so that people understand that everything they're able to do, terribly, all of that is because we are paying for it.
Right. I mean, sometimes it's like maybe we should start with some of the simple things and stop calling it a tax refund that we get around April 15th, because it's not a refund. It just means you overpaid, like you paid a bigger portion. And so it's not like, it's not like they're somehow like they're giving you back.
Right, a little
Like,
bonus.
it's not like a bonus. Like, this was your money that they took too much out of your paycheck and now you're getting it back. And it's like, how do we talk about it in
Interesting
a
you
way
should
that?
say that there, because some of the people, when they interview particularly black males and sometimes black females about why they were supporting Trump, they said they remembered he gave them a check. And I said, you knucklehead, that was your money. Giving you
Right.
nothing. That
It's our
it's
money.
same thing you're saying. Like that's not was excess bonus, like out of the goodness of their heart. That was tax dollars.
Right.
So, it's just something about that pot of money that people, you're right, they think they're getting something back that is not theirs. Like somebody was so good to them that they
And it was there. So, I mean, this is all coming out of our paychecks. It's coming out of like our, whatever, our retirements. Like, we're all paying. So this is our country, and we need to have more control over it, because, right now the billionaires are looking at our Social Security and other kinds of things. And again, if we want to see where this might go, it's like Argentina is where Elon Musk has gotten his whole ideas for Doge and why he's going after Social Security. And you can Social Security in Argentina, they are reducing Social Security for seniors, like senior citizens now, and retirees are regularly the ones in the streets demanding that their retirements get returned. And so, like they're coming after these things that we've paid for, that we built. And this is like, I mean, how crazy does a guy that has more money than any single human deserves is somehow telling us that we don't deserve, a couple thousand bucks a month to retire? I mean, it's just,
So Dan, in the last few minutes that we have left, you talked a couple of times about the kind of country that we want to have, and that no, we don't want to go back. There were some things that needed to be improved. What kind of process does that look like, and what is that going to take for people to really start re-envisioning democracy? Because the last 200 something years has been an experiment that ain't really been working. So what would it look like going forward? Since we're
Yeah,
going
I
to be
think,
standing for a democracy, we need to know what that looks like.
of course, of course. I mean, I think it's what you said. I mean, this country has always been about this experiment, and it's time for us to experiment again. It's time for us to say this current iteration of our democracy isn't working. And it's now being taken advantage of by really bad people who are using the challenges that our democracy currently has to make themselves rich and powerful, when the truth is people really want a world that works for them and their children. And so, I always think about like these kind of moments as like, this is our opportunity to, if we can organize ourselves and bring ourselves together, this is an these are big opportunities to make big kinds of changes. And so, step one, I think, is we all have to start to dream. They want us to remain afraid. They want us to continue to watch the news and get depressed and feel like there's nothing to be done. But this is actually a huge moment of opportunity where people are angry and people are looking for a different direction for our country. And this first 100 days has shown that the vast majority of us don't want this. And so now let's start to dream and build about what this could be. And then let's start to talk to our neighbors and talk to our families and start to say like, hey, this country has always been an experiment. Let's start another one. Let's think about what the next iteration of what's be the Phoenix rising out of the ashes here, and start to dream about how do we, the Electoral College is is not something that should be deciding our who our leaders are. We in our lifetimes, we've had more presidents get elected who won because of the Electoral College, not because of the popular vote. And like, we need to be a true democracy, in my opinion. We need to think about how money has ruined our politics and how we need to get money out of our politics. We need to think about how do we use technology and a new world we're in to think about democracy in a completely different way. And so I just think we're at the beginning of a huge opportunity to dream and be that next experiment on how we bring our country together and build. Got a daughter, I fight, with hope that she's going to have a better life, and her kids, if she chooses to have them, will have a better life. And like, that's what I believe in, and that's what I do every day. And I think we're at an opportune place to think about and dream and then start to organize to make that happen. So this is a very, very challenging time, but it's also an opportune time if we're willing to take it.
Yeah, this year is the year of the snake in the Chinese calendar, and it is all about shedding old stuff, baggage. And so I do agree that this is a time where, in the midst of all the turmoil, we can be thinking big, we can be dreaming big. Now, where do you see the whole DEI in the dream for democracy, and that is diversion, equity, and inclusion? Because that has been under such this attack, we must know that it's important because it wouldn't be going after it. So, how
100%.
does that fit in with a democracy?
I mean, our country is made of so many pieces, and if we're not about embracing diversity, equity, inclusion, then then we're not believing in a true democracy and in a true healthy country. And so it should be at the foundation of whatever we build next. I mean, this is who we are. We are a nation that is made up of so many different people. And part of what you can argue about what's made this country unique is that, we have brought pieces of the world together in one place. And, that is not something that we should see as a, as that's like what's made us an amazing country. I mean, and it's a part, and it's like what we should be embracing, and it's what we should be leaving, and it should be a foundation of what our, what we believe and what our future is. But unfortunately, I think, there are very clearly forces at play that are afraid of the future because, they've benefited from the past and they want to continue to benefit, and they're afraid of, where our country is headed. And, and that's some of the forces we're facing right here. And, but at our foundation, we've always been such a better nation when we embrace the trueness of who we are. And I just feel like that's at our foundation.
I think you're absolutely correct, even though that has been wrought with contradictions, because I'm
Always.
thinking about what's going on in Japan with the birth rate. And one of the things that they talked about on this documentary is that it's really only two ways to deal with the declining population, because it's going to affect every sector of society, is that A, they find ways for people to have more babies, which is not really happening, or they start infusing other people into the society. And what I found interesting, like the one guy that was saying it, is like, that's probably not going to happen because we've been such a homogeneous society. It's going to take a whole nother thing to get people to understand that they see somebody that don't look like them. And I got to thinking about, I'm like, yeah, that probably is going to be a problem. But you know, if that's how you survive, that's how you survive, and you have to make those kind of adjustments so that you do survive. And I think we will be looking at not that scenario, but we certainly will be looking at scenarios that, like, okay, if we don't make this move, then we either going backwards, or you know, there's going to be much more turmoil in this country. So yes, I think we got a lot to think about ahead of us, Dan, and we got a lot to do. We got a lot to do. We
Yeah, I
got a
mean,
lot to do.
we're on a bumpy road, but the people who answer that question the right way are the ones who are gonna lead the, and, otherwise, as you said, I mean, Japan, if they can't figure that out, they're gonna continue to shrink and shrink and shrink and pay the price of that. And so,
And they absolutely are doing that. So thank you for stopping by, Dan. And we
Thank
got lots
you.
of work to do. And I will be keeping people updated on what Standing for Democracy is doing so that they can, you know, get in where they fit in. But yeah, it's a lot happening, not only where you are, but nationally. And these motions are connected. It's a very exciting time. So yes, thank you for
And
joining.
please come to our websites, www.standingfordemocracy.org, and sign up, and you can get more information and get involved and, be a part of building our future.
And check out the Facebook page, because that has lots of stuff always happening, always information that people have shared. So you don't want to miss that. So the Facebook for Standing for Democracy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to leave you with a couple of announcements of things that are coming up that I think you might be interested in. One is tonight is the threat of charter schools that's being put on by the Green Party, and there is a panel of folks who will be talking about that. So you need to register in order to be on there. It's a webinar, and that information is on my website, jamalarogers.com. Also, Missouri Workers Center is having a boot camp, and I wish I could be a part of this, y'all. It sounds really exciting. It's a 2-day training on the fundamentals of worker organizing. And so if you ever had an inkling to want to organize, they got an opportunity for you. There also is a Solidarity Academy, which is a 12-week summer fellowship. And so that will be June 9th through August 29th, right here in St. Louis. And there is a registration for that. But Stipends are available, but the seats are limited, y'all. So you got to jump on that. The information for doing that also is at jamalarogers.com. So yeah, this is the chance for you to get some organizing under your belt from people who've been doing it and know how to do it. So check that out. The other thing, sadly, that's coming up is the memorial service for our beloved sister warrior, Martha J. West. That's going to be at Lane Tabernacle Church, 910 North Newstead, at May 17th at 2 p.m. So if you knew Martha West, you need to be there and honor that sister, lift her up. For every other thing that we've done on the show or things that I've written that you want to check out, all of that is available at the website, jamalarogers.com. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, your humble host, reminding you that we have a serial liar and a convicted felon leading this country, and we can do better. So put on your Gideon suit. Let's get together. Let's get organized and get out there. I will see you on the battlefield. Thank you for listening.